escape. This is WBAI 99.5 FM in New York, and this is Iggy Pop.
Here in New York City, you are tuned to 99.5 FM WBAI. Code Pink, usually heard at this time on a Thursday morning. They're off this week and we'll be back next week at 11. Coming up next, an encore presentation of Sojourner Truth.
Welcome to Sojourner Truth. Thank you for staying with us. This is your host, Margaret Prescott. Today, a special treat, the incredible range and analysis of Dr. Gerald Horn. I think Dr. Horn himself has lost count of how many books he has written, but he has a brand new book out. We'll be discussing that with him and much more. Do you know what the bittersweet science is? Well, Dr. Gerald Horn's range from boxing to white supremacy confronted to jazz and justice to Haiti, just an incredible range. He spends the hour with us. We live in a global world. We're all interrelated. So on Sojourner Truth, we work to bring directly to you news and views on local, national, and international policies and stories that affect us all. And we draw out how those of us most impacted, women, communities of color, and other communities are responding. We also discuss the interrelationship between art and politics. Now for our news headlines.
Much of New York State is reopening. So many of our favorite activities were upended during the last year, but the increase of vaccinations in eligible people and low COVID-19 positivity rates are allowing a kind of return to normal. One activity we lost during the height of the pandemic was attending sporting events, but that's changing. Large arenas for our local teams are now open and allowing their stands to be mostly filled with excited and eager fans.
Not only did I think I was never going to get back to a game, probably till a lot later when the shutdown happened, but I did never did I think it was going to be that packed.
Matthew Kim is a recent Pratt grad from Brooklyn. He went to games 3 and 4 of the Islanders playoffs against the Boston Bruins in Nassau Coliseum last week. He's gone to many hockey games before the pandemic shut down the arena, and for him, being back in the bubble during the playoffs was emotional.
We were still fairly confident we weren't going to get back to games probably till late 2021, maybe even later than that. We had no clue with the vaccine and the rollout, and it was tough. But I think looking back on it now, if you would have told me that I would be at Nassau in 2021 in mid-May, I probably would have told you were crazy, but I wouldn't have traded it for anything, for sure.
The high number of New Yorkers that are now fully vaccinated is a major reason these arenas are opening. 54.8% of the state's total population is fully vaccinated. According to New York State, the COVID positivity rate has dropped to 0.6% over a 7-day average. These New York arenas have rules. They separate vaccinated and unvaccinated people. You have to show proof of vaccines to enter the fully vaccinated sections and a recent negative COVID test to enter the arena if you are not vaccinated. Justin Maurer is a gym teacher from Harlem. He went to a Nets game at Barclays Center last week and says being back at a crowded arena after the initial horrors of COVID is emotional. The fears he had during the pandemic were hard to shake when arriving at his first crowded event in over a year.
At first, for the first 15 minutes, I felt paranoid because I would think, like, we're not used to being close around one another, even though last year everyone was so accustomed to that. So it was definitely very emotional. Like, it was very paranoid. But once I really got into the groove of the game, once everything started getting better, like throughout the game, I started to ease my comfort.
Maurer sat in a fully vaccinated section at Barclays Center. He says going to this game was a once-in-a-lifetime experience.
Once I started getting comfortable, it was definitely a worthwhile experience being in the playoffs, the Nets winning at home, and the entire stadium just kept chanting Brooklyn, 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 and it was just very emotional.
The Knicks also opened up their stadium for a playoff game. Ella Ajinubi from Long Island went to the game and says being back after all this time made her feel a strong sense of community alongside fellow New Yorkers in the crowd.
I think New Yorkers, it's like at this point, it's like an ethnicity. Like we are New York. People are very like nationalistic about New York, lack of a better word. And I think New York showed out and we showed our colors. We cheered from the beginning to the end, whether it was for our team or against the opposing team.
Thanks to dropping COVID cases and an increase of vaccinations in New York, the reopening of in-person events is the first step to a return to normal. Angela Palumbo, WBAI News, New York.
And this is Margaret Prescott, host of Sojourner Truth. And we have an incredible treat today. We've got Dr. Gerald Horn with us for the entire hour. Now, we here at Sojourner Truth, we like to feel we have a very special relationship with Dr. Horn. We're a nationally syndicated show, and I think likely on Pacifica Radio, Sojourner Truth may have, Dr. Horn may have appeared on more of our shows than any of the others, but I may be wrong about that, and Dr. Horn, who will be joining us shortly, will correct me if I am. But before I welcome Dr. Horn, I do have to say that this station is in fund drive. Dr. Gerald Horn is a huge supporter of not only this show, Sojourner Truth, Freedom Now, and other shows, but across the Pacifica stations. Dr. Horn is incredibly, incredibly generous with his time, and as well as making his books available to you, the Sojourner Truth listener. And he has a brand new book out, and I'm delighted that we'll be offering it today. The title of the book, The Bittersweet Science, Racism, Racketeering, and the Political Economy. And you know what? This is a really special deal because I actually thought that the thank you gift price should have been a little bit higher on this one because it's a brand new book. It will appreciate in value and it will be signed. The pledge level is only $100. I just can't believe it. So that's quite a steal today. Please call 1-212-209-2950. That's 212-209-2950. We know there are a lot of Gerald Horn fans out there. You want to add this one to your collection, but you know what? You can get this one signed. Also today, we're offering up The White Supremacy Confronted, that book by Dr. Gerald Horn. The pledge level for that is $120. That is quite a substantive book based on exhaustive research in all presidential libraries. Well, you know, Dr. Horn, he seems to spend his life researching. Well, not only, we know that he's a sports fan and jazz and others living a very, very full and rich life at the same time, really sharing with us and with the world his brilliance and his range. We're also offering up the Jazz and Justice book by Dr. Gerald Horn, and that is a $75 pledge. Jazz and Justice, Racism and the Political Economy of the Music book, $75 pledge. Call 212-209-2950. That's 212-209-2950. I've got to raise $2,000 at least during this hour. And right out of the gate, I just want to say anybody who is a fan of Dr. Horn and who is able to do it, please call us to show your support for this show, for Dr. Horn's work, to keep this station on the air. If you are not yet a member, I can call and pledge at the basic $25 level for a basic membership where you get to vote in elections, etc. But if you could pledge at the $100 level, you will get Dr. Horn's brand new book signed, okay, signed for you. If you pledge at the $120 level, there's a thank you gift for you. You pledge at the $75 level, there is a thank you gift for you. And if you don't want any of these items, but you just want to make sure that Pacifica survives Pacifica, over 70 years old now. We want to preserve these voices for the next generation. Now, there are a couple of songs, actually, that Dr. Horn reminded me of that's related to, in part, to the topic that we'll be discussing today. I actually just want you to hear a little bit of that right now. And if we could cue it to when Paul Robeson begins to sing in King Joe, and this is with Count Basie's orchestra. Let's do that as a very special welcome to Sojourner Truth to our show today. If we could cue that up and go to that right now, the great Paul Robeson, incredible voice, the great Count Basie.
Black-eyed Pete's cornbread, what makes you so strong? Black-eyed Pete's cornbread, what makes you so strong? Cornbread, say I come from where Joe Louis was born. Lord, I know a secret, or I'd never tell. Lord, I know a secret, or I'd never tell. I know what makes old Joe a hook and punch and roll like hell.
All righty, maybe we could lower that a little. I'd like to welcome Dr. Gerald Horn, Moore's Professor of History and African American Studies at the University of Houston. He's written more than 30 books. His most recently published book is The Bittersweet Science, Racism, Racketeering, and the Political Economy of Boxing. He's also the author of The Dawning of the Apocalypse, The Roots of Slavery, White Supremacy, Settler Colonialism, and Capitalism in the Long 16th Century, White Supremacy Confronted, U.S. Imperialism and Anti-Communism versus the Liberation of Southern Africa from Rhodes to Mandela, and Jazz and Justice, Racism and the Political Economy of the Music, Facing the Rising Sun, African Americans, Japan, and the Rise of Afro-Asian Solidarity, The Apocalypse of Settler Colonialism, and The Roots of Slavery, White Supremacy, and Capitalism in 17th Century North America and the Caribbean, Storming the Heavens, African Americans in the Early Fight for the Right to Fly. And he is also the Ida B. Wells and Sheikh Anta Diop Award for Outstanding Scholarship and Leadership in Africana Studies. He was thus honored in that way. And it's an honor for us, Dr. Gerald Horn, to welcome you back to Sojourner Truth.
Thank you for inviting me.
Okay, so Dr. Horn, I read that full bio. I know on our weekly roundtable, for the weekly roundtable fans, you generally don't hear all of that. But you know what, Dr. Horn, what I just read was just a sampling of your range. And now you have this brand new book. And Dr. Horn, I also need to raise $2,000 during this hour. So I hope as we are discussing, our listeners will call us at 212-209-2950. Signed copy of Dr. Horn's brand new book. So Dr. Horn, let's start with this because, you know, people will say, well, this is a book about boxing. This is a book a lot more than about boxing. And we're going to dig deep into that. But tell us about this title, The Bittersweet Science.
Well, the title comes from the fact that historically boxing has been known as the sweet science, despite the violence and the often toxic masculinity that is inherent in the sport. There's also a kind of science to the ability of one person to disarm and disassemble another person in the ring. And I think that's one of the reasons why boxing has had such an exalted status, not least in the black community. That song you just played by the great Paul Robeson, of course, it was about Joe Louis, who was a kind of folk hero in not only black America, but the United States in general. He was the heavyweight boxing champion from the late 1930s to the late 1940s. He was also quite close to the political left, as suggested by that song by Robeson. He was quite close to the last legitimate third-party candidate, Henry Wallace, in 1948. And that led him into troubled waters, I'm afraid to say, once the Red Scare and the Cold War erupted. And there was a systematic effort to denude Joe Louis of his wealth through spurious Internal Revenue Service lawsuits and all the rest. And he ended his life, I'm afraid to say, rather ignominiously in neighboring Las Vegas as a kind of greeter at Las Vegas casinos. It was a mighty fall, but it also bespeaks the fact that he was a powerful fighter not only in the ring, but outside the ring against racism and injustice.
Right, and let's dig deep into that right now. And again, if you call us at 212-209-2950, $100 pledge, you get this brand new book, The Bittersweet Science, Racism, Racketeering, and the Political Economy of Boxing. A pledge at $120 level, you will get Dr. Horn's book. We're offering all Dr. Horn today, White Supremacy Confronted, U.S. Imperialism and Anti-Communism versus the Liberation of Southern Africa from Rhodes to Mandela, for a $75 discounted price today only. Jazz and Justice, Racism and the Political Economy of the Music. And I'll have to say sports and jazz and boxing and jazz is definitely a connection there. But Dr. Horn, for people who are wondering why your interest in this particular topic, given your range, you often write, of course, African and African-American history, critique of capitalism and the rise of slavery and the building of empire, et cetera, et cetera. But why did you write this particular book? And why should people call to get it right now?
Well, the second question is easier to call. People should call in order to support this great radio station and this great program, Sojourner Truth, with the great host, Margaret Prescott. Now, why I wrote this book, I've had a long-term interest in sports. So, from the time I was growing up in St. Louis, Missouri, and selling newspapers in the streets as a child laborer, one of the first things I did was to read the sports page. One of the first things I do today is to read the sports page.
Wow.
And you know, the United States is a sports-obsessed society, and I'm afraid to say that I've been sucked into that. But sports is more than just a game. As the example of boxing shows, sports helps to illustrate themes concerning masculinity. I mean, for example, one of the reasons why black Americans have done so well in the ring is because, even though it may be forgotten now, at one time it was quite common to speak of black men as yellow-bellied cowards, because supposedly real men, quote, did not allow themselves, unquote, to be enslaved, to be subjected to Jim Crow, etc. And this created enormous and put enormous chip on the shoulder of many black men in the attempt to rebut that kind of scurrilous charge. And then if you flip the charge over, once black men began to excel in the ring, then the charge was put forward that they were a beast, that they were a brute. And so they had us going and coming. I should also say that this book also deals with the role of women in boxing as well. You may know that the daughter of Muhammad Ali was a great pugilist in her own right. And as well, it deals with the exploits in the ring of other groupings. For example, even though it may be forgotten now, at one time there were a number of significant Jewish championship boxers, from Benny Leonard to Barney Ross. And like black Americans, when you look at their oral histories, they oftentimes say, well, I had to learn how to use my fists because growing up, say, in Boston or Chicago, I had to fight my Italian-American neighbors and Irish-American neighbors just to get out of my house to walk to school, fight back against anti-Semitic slurs and all the rest. And then in recent years, we had a kind of ethnic succession with the rise of the great Latino boxers, the great boxers of Mexican origin, great boxers of Puerto Rican origin, etc. And you should keep in mind that, as in the case of Joe Louis, what happens when these boxers begin to accumulate small fortunes, or in some cases large fortunes, they oftentimes donate those funds back to civil rights efforts in their communities. That was the case with Joe Louis to a certain degree, and it was certainly the case with Jack Johnson, the great heavyweight champion of the first few decades of the 20th century, who was a crown champion in 1910, which led to a search for a so-called Great White Hope, represented in the film of the same name with James Earl Jones, the great actor, starring as Jack Johnson. And Jack Johnson became a real tribune against white supremacy because of the spurious federal cases that were affixed to him. He had to move to Mexico and try to establish a beachhead against Jim Crow from across the border from Texas. And so this is a story that's larger than just a game. It's a story that's larger than just a sport. It's really a story about the fight against racism, white supremacy, and injustice.
Absolutely. Thank you, Dr. Horn. I'm afraid I am going to have to ask our listeners to call us at 818-985-5735 or go online to kpfk.org. We are leading today. We have to raise at least $2,000, if not more, during this hour of the station in a kind of desperate straits. Dr. Horn's brand new book, a bargain price for a pledge level of $100. Your thank you gift will not only get you Dr. Horn's brand new gift, the book, The Bittersweet Science, Racism, Racketeering, and the Political Economy of Boxing, but it will be signed by Dr. Gerald Horn. This will appreciate in value. You could add to your Gerald Horn library. I need to see some phone calls coming in. The lines are wide open right now. I need four people calling, pledging at the $500 level. That's $84 a month for 6 months. And you could get actually several of these items. You could pledge at the, if nine people pledge at the $220 level, I suggest you really get all three of these books. And by the way, you can gift them too. If you don't want to hold on to all of them on your own, you can gift them, but you got to call 212-209-2950. Dr. Horn will stay with us for this entire hour. And you could well imagine, even though his new book, of course, talking about boxing, it's not going to be like any boxing book, a book about boxing or even film about boxing that you have ever seen, because it is the great in-depth research and analysis of Dr. Gerald Horn. I mean, a lot of the information in his book based on substantive evidence collected from memoirs, court records, files from New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Nevada, and so much more. And by examining the historical roots of boxing, Dr. Horn is able to talk about the bigger picture of racism, poverty, white supremacy, and organized crime imposed on black people. Call 212-209-2950. That's 212-209-2950. Dr. Horn, you mentioned women in boxing, and I was just reading a story about Clarissa Shields, a young 25-year-old black woman from Michigan, right? And she is a rising star. You know, she was in the Olympic gold medal. So we're seeing increasingly women getting involved in this sport. But Dr. Horn, tell us about the African and slavery connection to boxing. In your book, you talk about Bo Jack, about his significance, about Oloda Equinio, I'm not quite sure if I'm saying that right, and that boxing is actually a very, very old sport. Tell us a bit about that.
Well, boxing is one of the oldest sports known to humankind. You find examples of boxing stretching back thousands of years in China. But as I tell the story, boxing also has roots in Africa, particularly congruent with the rise of the unlimited African slave trade. You began to see the development of a unique form of African martial arts. For example, listeners, after the show is over, of course, can go online and see examples of capoeira, which is a very celebrated martial arts come choreography in Brazil that likely has roots across the Atlantic Ocean in Angola, where many of the enslaved Africans emerged. And not coincidentally, this sport, this martial arts comes choreography known as capoeira, developed as enslavers began to descend on the shores of Angola, and those seeking to resist the African slave trade felt that they needed weapons in the form of their fists and their feet in order to beat back the enslavers. You mentioned Bojack, and that brings us to these shores. Bojack had roots in Augusta, GA, Augusta, Georgia, and he got his start in the so-called Battle Royale. That is to say, he was a popular fighter during the 1940s, but during the time of slavery, you had the Battle Royale, where for their amusement and entertainer, the slaveholders would put 8 or 9 young black men in a ring blindfolded and then have them go at each other, and whoever emerged triumphant won some sort of prize. That continued after slavery, and Bojack distinguished himself as a champion in the Battle Royal, and then became one of the most popular draws in boxing in Madison Square Garden in the 1940s and the early 1950s. Once again, this speaks to the point that despite certain pseudoscientists trying to ascribe the excellence in sports from track and field to boxing somehow to the genetic makeup or the physiognomy of black people, actually, rather than a nature argument, you should look at a nurture argument. That is to say, it's the environment that helped to develop these sportsmen and sports figures and these great athletes. That is to say, even with the women who you referenced in your opening comment, they too had to learn how to fight back against a toxic masculinity, and this leads to them excelling as well in the ring.
Right. And then you have in Brazil and increasingly in the United States, you have capoeira. I think that is it. And that is a different kind of form, but it is definitely related to the African connection and the kind of fisticuffs, as you talk about in your book, Dr. Horn.
Well, that's certainly the case. And it's also the case that over the years, you've had a number of black Americans who have excelled beyond Joe Louis and Jack Johnson. Of course, their successor to a certain degree is the man born as Cassius Clay, the so-called Louisville Lip, who was catapulted into prominence as Muhammad Ali. You may recall that he is now depicted in the film One Night in Miami that's getting a kind of Oscar buzz as we speak. And I dare say that some of the tidbits that I have on the life of Muhammad Ali, the great heavyweight boxing champion, will be of interest to many in your audience. And of course, it's based upon archival research. You may also recall that Muhammad Ali becomes a kind of political hero when he refuses to be conscripted and drafted into the genocidal war in Vietnam in the late 1960s. In retaliation, the authorities prevent him from fighting. As a result, he tours campuses and has a kind of vaudeville act that helps to catapult him even further into the stratosphere of celebrity. And then he goes to the U.S. Supreme Court, wins the case, and has a triumphant return as a boxer. But alas, Muhammad Ali also represents what might be called the, quote, dark side, unquote, of boxing, because he absorbed many blows in the ring, and he, towards the end of his life, had a kind of Parkinson's syndrome. You might recall this at the 1996 Olympics when he lights the torch and he is shaking visibly. I think that that also has something to do with the fact that Muhammad Ali, who was excoriated and denounced when he was opposing the war in Vietnam, towards the end of his life, he becomes a kind of folk hero amongst many who were denouncing him in the 1960s. And I think that some of it has to do with the fact that towards the end of his life, he was obviously a damaged figure, that is to say, damaged physically, and therefore became perhaps less fearsome. But in any case, I think Muhammad Ali will live forever in the hearts and minds of those who recall his anti-war activism.
Right. And, you know, Dr. Horn, I really wish I could just let you talk about this stuff and not have to interrupt to ask our listeners to call 212-209-2950 and support your work, support this show. So keep this the doors open, pledging at the $100 level. You will get the Dr. Horn's brand new book, and it will be signed by him. We still have to raise another $1,800 by the top of the hour, Dr. Horn, and I'll have to make a last call also, because as you know, if we don't make our goal, I won't be able to make this material available to you in the future. And this, you're getting an incredible deal here. $100 pledge, you get a signed copy of this brilliant brand new book based on extensive, exhaustive research in court records. Now, those of you, I love, you mentioned Dr. Horn, the film. Regina King did a great job with One Night in Miami. But you know what? I loved it, did a great job. But when you look at a film like that, you know that there is a lot more to find out about it. And you're absolutely right. Dr. Horn's book, The Bittersweet Science, Racism, Racketeering, and the Political Economy of Boxing, goes deep into Muhammad Ali. You also talk about Muhammad Ali's dad. I wanted you to say a little bit about that. But also, given Jim Crow, given the racism that, you know, the ongoing racism in that era, well, still today, how black men and by extension, the black community as a whole use boxing. I mean, people make the case, well, they were used by boxing, but the black community also used the sport for a number of reasons. So tell us a bit about Muhammad Ali's dad, but also just going back a little bit to the Jim Crow era and boxing and some of what the boxers had to go through. Again, that number is 212-209-2950. The thank you gifts, The Bittersweet Science, Dr. Horn's new book signed by him. Jazz and Justice is just a $75 pledge. Racism and the Political Economy of the Music book, $120 pledge. The White Supremacy Confronted book. And you know what? I suggest that you get all three of those, and the pledge level is $295 to get all three, and we'll give you the breakdown in a moment of $295 once I figure out the math here. But I know that some of you listening can pledge at the $1,000 level, likely can pledge at the $500 level, even if you don't want any of these thank you gifts. You can just say, I just want to keep Sojourner Truth on the air. I support Dr. Horn. I support, but I want to make sure Pacifica remains as a viable alternative network, the last bastion of listener-sponsored radio. Call 212-209-2950. That's 1-212-209-2950. And you know what? I need seven people calling, pledging at the $295 level. That's all. Just seven of you listening right now saying you'll get all of the Dr. Horn material that we are offering today. So, Dr. Horn, tell us a bit about that Jim Crow era and boxing, but you and Muhammad Ali's dad, but also some of the other greats in boxing as we are moving forward in our discussion. Dr. Horn.
Well, as you know, Muhammad Ali was born into the world in Louisville, Kentucky, a citadel of Jim Crow. He was from a working-class family. Both of his parents emerged from the Kentucky working class. Early in his life, what happens is that someone stole a bicycle from him as a young boy. And he was very upset with that. And it was that particular material circumstance that convinced him that he needed to learn how to defend himself against those who would seek to exploit him. This leads him into the Rome Olympics in 1960, where he wins a medal. But what strikes striking about the Muhammad Ali, and it's a kind of a through line that I would say connects not only boxing, but jazz music, and to a certain degree, Southern Africa as well, is the fact that all boxers, particularly during the era of Jim Crow, had to figure out a way how to confront and circumvent organized crime, because organized crime was a material force in this particular sport, and to a certain degree still is a material force in this particular sport. And I think one of the ways that Muhammad Ali, interestingly enough, was able to escape the claws of organized crime was actually through joining the Nation of Islam, because when he joined the Nation of Islam, this brought him the protective services, if you like, of the Fruit of Islam, which is this kind of paramilitary formation within the Nation of Islam, which was sufficiently muscular to confront organized crime. And if you look at music, for example, if you look at the music we call jazz, at least pre-pandemic, it was mostly performed in clubs that were controlled by organized crime. And likewise, if you look at the liberation struggles in Southern Africa that I talk about in the book White Supremacy Confronted, culminating with the independence of South Africa under Nelson Mandela's leadership in 1994, one of the material forces they had to confront was mercenaries. That is to say, the United States, which oftentimes was prevented by the progressive movements in this country from dispatching the U.S. military to that part of the world, oftentimes had to engage in a kind of covert action by hiring missionaries, thugs, gangsters, dead-enders, who descended sometimes in the hundreds, sometimes in the thousands, on Southern Africa to fight on the battlefield against liberation forces. And so I think that we have to understand that in talking about these books, we're not only just talking about, for example, a game or a sport called boxing, we're really trying to paint a larger picture of U.S. society, trying to paint a larger picture of global dynamics. And ultimately, what we're trying to do is plot a way out of this madness in which we're now ensnared into a brighter future.
Right, and thank you, Dr. Hoare. The number to call, 212-209-2950. That's 1-212-209-2950. Dr. Hoare, we still need to raise another $1,580 by the top of the hour. I only have 40 minutes in which to do it. Well, actually, a little under 40 minutes in which to do it. And I believe in you. We can do this one caller at a time. Our guest, Dr. Gerald Hoare, he has given so freely of his time to this show, to this station. Usually on a Friday, you hear Dr. Hoare on our weekly roundtable. I know there are a lot of Dr. Hoare fans out there. I need to hear from you. I need to know that you appreciate him. You appreciate the work that we do here on Sojourner Truth. And I would feel very, very badly and somewhat embarrassed, Dr. Hoare, if we get to the top of the hour and we have not made our goal of $2,000. I mean, there's so many places I go, run into people, and they're like, Margaret, we just love Dr. Hoare. It's so great. He has given us so much. Think of all of the knowledge you have accumulated just from listening to Dr. Hoare. And if for no other reason, even if you're not interested in boxing, you're not interested in sports or the material we're offering today, just call to say, give a love pledge for Dr. Hoare, an appreciation of his work and how much he means to you. And imagine if this show was off the air and the nationally syndicated show we do across this nation, bringing the voice of Dr. Hoare to this nation and also on SoundCloud worldwide to the world, if that was shut down, if that voice wasn't there, where do you think? You think the liberal television stations are going to be picking it up? I don't think so. We need you. We need your support to continue to hear the voice of Dr. Hoare. And if you know any young people that are interested in sports or any young people who are interested in music, please, we need you calling right now. We've had about four pledges thus far. I need to raise about $1,480. So all of you who are telling me how much Dr. Hoare means to you, how much you learn from him, pick up the phone and call. Even if you call $25, $50, pledge at any level right now.
212-209-2950. That's 212-209-2950.
Dr. Horn, two things I want to talk with you about, well, a lot more than two, but let's go here right now. In your book, The Bittersweet Science, Racism, Racketeering, and the Political Economy, you not only talk about black boxers and the way black boxers used boxing to really try to empower the black community, but you also talk about ethnic boxers. Let's talk about that a bit. You know, the Irish, the Italian, the Jewish boxers. 212-209-2950. Dr. Horn, tell us about the ethnic boxers and how they used boxing.
Well, as noted, in the 1920s and the 1930s in particular, you had a spate of celebrated Jewish American boxers. And what's interesting is that with the onset of World War II, you see an analogy to the battle royale that is taking place in the concentration camps. What I mean is that just like the slaveholders and their successors in Jim Crow would oftentimes, for their entertainment, stage these battle royales with young black men in the ring, you have something similar taking place in concentration camps, where for their entertainment and titillation, you would have the German administrators of these concentration camps who would love to see these Jewish American men pummel each other into submission, bludgeon each other into submission. And I think, once again, it's that material circumstance that leads to the rise of Jewish American boxers, just like it led to the rise of black American boxers during the battle days of the Battle Royale. But what happens is that with the revulsion against fascism, culminating with the conclusion of World War II in 1945, along with government programs like the GI Bill, you saw that many Jewish Americans were able to migrate away from the ring and into more managerial and administrative positions in the sport. And so today, a neighbor of you in Los Angeles, I'm speaking of Bob Arum in Las Vegas, has been at the top of the pyramid of the sport in terms of promoting the sport. And of course, he is a Jewish American. I should also say that other than Bob Arum, there are a number of what might be called bold-faced names that jump out of the pages of this book. The former U.S. President, Donald J. Trump, was a boxing promoter in Atlantic City, in some of his casinos there. And of course, it was once said about Donald J. Trump as a boxing promoter that you wouldn't trust anything that came out of his mouth, even if his tongue were notarized. You should also note that Nelson Mandela was a boxer of some note as he was growing up in South Africa, as well as Berry Gordy, the founder of Motown Records, who is still with us in the land of the living, along with Harry Reid, a former Senate Majority Leader, once again from neighboring Nevada. So I think that what this helps to illustrate is that boxing as a sport helps to develop discipline. And discipline is something that is useful in whatever pursuit of life that you tend to carry on. And likewise, boxing as a sport helps one to develop a certain ability to think quickly on one's feet, as they say. And I think that that's also a fungible skill. And that's one of the reasons why I would urge parents in particular to consider this particular book, because I think that boxing is more than a game. It's more than a sport. It helps to encourage discipline. And certainly reading about sports and reading about boxing will help to sharpen one's mind, which I think is exceedingly important for any young person today.
All righty. Thank you, Dr. Gerald Horn is our guest. This is Margaret Prescott, host of Sojourner Truth. We have 15 minutes. In 15 minutes, I need to raise $1,480. I hope you're not going to let me down here. I need, if you could call and pledge at the $1,000 level, and you can go online. There are a number of gifts that are online that you could make a selection for, a $1,000 a pledge. If you don't want any thank you gifts, but you are worried that 95% of talk radio is right-wing talk radio, their listeners, believe me, they know how to support their efforts, but Pacifica Radio is the last bastion of listener-sponsored radio in the United States, and our phone lines are wide open right now. We're showing some appreciation for Dr. Gerald Horn. We have his brand new book signed, $100 pledge. We'll get that to you. If 14 people call right now and pledge at the $100 level, we will send you that book. We also, for a $75 pledge, we have Jazz and Justice, Racism and the Political Economy of the Music book, also by Dr. Gerald Horn, and a $120 pledge, White Supremacy Confronted. That's $295. And again, as I said, if I have just five people calling right now, pledging at the $295 level, we will make our goal for this hour. Again, 212-209-2950. Now, I'm going to put out a Sojourner Truth challenge here, because, Dr. Horn, I'm going to make a pledge for all three of your books. That comes to $295. Believe me, that's a stretch for me, but I will do it. And the reason I'm doing it is that I want at least two or three or more people to match my pledge of $295. 818-985-5735. Show some love for Dr. Horn. Show some love for this show. Help to keep this station open. I'm serious about that. You know what time it is. We have to inform ourselves. We have to gird ourselves. We have to give information and material to young people. 212-209-2950. And a lot of people may get interested in politics, not directly. They may get interested, youth may get interested in politics because they're interested in sport, right? And then they look not only at Kaepernick, but they look at this in-depth analysis and information that Dr. Horn has worked so hard to put together. That will be an inspiration for them. Also, a lot of them become political through music. So the Jazz and Justice, Racism and the Political Economy of the Music, what an incredible gift for young people. I am, Dr. Horn, a little frantic here because we do need to raise this money. I just pledged $295. My family is going to kill me for doing that because, you know, it's difficult for us. But we have, we still need to raise a lot more money by the top of the hour. Dr. Horn, and I'd like you to just tell us a little bit about William Patterson and the so-named communist connection here, because black boxers, I mean, you know, you talk about Joe Louis. I'd like you to talk a bit about the greats, including Joe Frazier, who was such a mixed bag. On the one hand, you know, born out of South Carolina, school dropout. In your book, you said he practiced as a young kid boxing on a burlap sack that was filled with rocks and moss and much more. He wound up, by the way, being a Nixon, Reagan, and H.W. Bush supporter, as well as Frank Rizzo of Philadelphia. So it can go either way. But Dr. Horn, just tell us about William Patterson and the communist connection there, how that was used to attack him, but also some of the boxing greats. Dr. Horn.
Well, as noted, Joe Louis was quite close to the organized left, but not only Paul Robeson and William Patterson, but the Southern Conference for Human Welfare, which during its heyday was derided as the so-called Communist Front. And as noted, this is what led him into so much trouble with the U.S. government once the political climate began to change. And as you also suggest, as the political climate began to change, you also saw that boxers, too, began to change. I'm thinking of Archie Moore, who listeners in Southern California might be familiar with because he was deeply involved in the community in San Diego, due south of where you're sitting as we speak. And he once again started off on a progressive tip, but towards the end of his career, he was denouncing the civil unrest that was erupting in Los Angeles, for example, in August 1965 with the so-called Watts Rebellion of August 1965. And what this speaks to is that in all of these books, there's a lot of Southern California history, because Southern California plays a prominent role in terms of boxing, as the example of Archie Moore tends to suggest, and also as the more contemporary example suggests. I'm speaking of Oscar de la Hoya, who, of course, is of Mexican origin and has migrated from the ring and to promoting sports with his Golden Boy production company. And I should also say that the same holds true for the music as well. It's no secret that Los Angeles has produced a all-star team of great jazz musicians. I think just off the top of my head, for example, of Dexter Gordon, the lanky saxophonist, and Chico Hamilton, the great drummer. And as well, both boxing and the music have established deep roots in neighboring Nevada. Think of, for example, the role of the great trumpeter Louis Armstrong in the Las Vegas casinos as they're emerging post-1945. And so I think for those who have an interest in local and regional history, I think that it would be, you would be well advised to pick up the phone and make a secure pledge.
Absolutely. And I mean, in this book, you'll find out a lot about Muhammad Ali. Also, Don King. Remember that character, Don King? He made a kind of a breakthrough role, a very mixed bag. He wasn't a fighter, but certainly he, as a promoter, he made a big impact. Dr. Horn may want to say something about him, but you'll learn more about Joe Frazier. Also, James Braddock, the Irish-American fighter. You'll learn about him, the role of the gangster, Mickey Cohen, Evander Holyfield, you'll learn more about it, the Trump connection too, in terms of the Donald Trump connection with Evander Holyfield, George Foreman, and more. Sonny Liston was another one. Leon Spinks just died recently, by the way. Dr. Horn, if knocked out Muhammad Ali, I mean, it was unbelievable when that happened, but he went downhill after that. I pledge $295 to get all of Dr. Horn's, the three books we're offering today of Dr. Horn, The Bittersweet Science, Racism, Racketeering, and the Political Economy of Boxing, $100 pledge. It will be signed. It will appreciate in value. It will make an incredible gift. Also, White Supremacy Confronted, $120 pledge. Jazz and Justice, Racism, and the Political Economy of the Music book, a $75 pledge. You know what? I only have about, 4.5 minutes to play. And you talked about Los Angeles. You made the connection also with music, and I talked about getting young people and their interest in sports as well as music. You know what? How about we hear a little of that song now, Mama Go Knock You Out. Remember that? Remember that, Dr. Horn? You had also asked about that, so I want to thank you by playing this song, and it's LL Cool J. Let's hear a little bit of LL Cool J, but keep calling us at 212-209-2950. If I'm making a last call for this material, I don't make my goal. I can't offer it anymore. What a shame that would be.
212-209-2950.
Come on, man.
Gonna knock you out. Dr. Horn, I only have 2.5 minutes left, and I want you to be able to give some final words here, but also to encourage people. We actually have about $500 to raise. $500 to raise. One person can do that by picking up the phone and calling
212-209-2950.
Or two people matching my pledge of $295 to get all of Dr. Horn's material. But Dr. Horn, I just want to say how much I appreciate you, and I know how much work and effort you put into this, and how generous you have been with your time with this show, and how much I and so many others have learned from you. So thank you, Dr. Horn, and give us some final thoughts here.
Well, the final thought would be where we began, which is the necessity to support this radio station, the little station that could, because we're about to enter deep, dark, and murky water. We're about to enter a very dangerous period, and we'll need Pacifica Radio now more than ever. So that's one of the reasons I've contributed my labor, and that's one of the reasons I would ask listeners to contribute their funds to the extent possible.
Absolutely. Thank you for that, Dr. Horn. Again, the number is
212-209-2950. 212-209-2950.
Of course, we're honoring Dr. Gerald Horn. We're lifting him up. We love Dr. Gerald Horn. We hope that you do, too, and that will be reflected in you picking up the phone. And Dr. Horn, thank you so much for everything that you do and how much you contribute to the country and to the world. Thank you so very much for joining us.
And coming up next, we have our news headlines, followed by the Gary Null Show over WBAI.
From WPFW in Washington and WBAI in New York, I'm Sue Goodwin. Here are some headlines. The Keystone XL pipeline is officially canceled. The developer of the controversial project announced Wednesday it is pulling the plug after the Biden administration revoked its permit in January. The Keystone XL pipeline was expected to carry 830,000 barrels per day of crude oil from the oil sand fields of western Canada to Nebraska, but the project was delayed for the past 12 years due to opposition from U.S. landowners, Native American tribes, and environmentalists. The demise of XL comes as other North American pipelines, including Dakota Access and the Enbridge Line 3, face continued opposition from environmental groups. Prosecutors in Minnesota say 179 people were arrested and charged with trespassing after a mass civil disobedience action on Monday against Enbridge Line 3. Another 68 were cited and released for public nuisance and unlawful assembly. In eastern Arizona, fire crews are battling two massive wildfires that have consumed more than 177,000 acres. The fires come as climate scientists say the western United States is suffering the second worst drought in 1,200 years, brought on by a combination of natural dry cycles and human-induced climate change. Lake Mead, the largest freshwater reservoir in the United States, is less than 36% full, its lowest level ever. Meanwhile, nearly 2 million people in the San Francisco Bay Area were placed under a water shortage emergency Wednesday as California's drought continued to worsen. The Louisiana State Police, involved in the 2019 fatal arrest of Ronald Green, is now reportedly the subject of an internal investigation into whether troopers have repeatedly targeted and abused black drivers. The Associated Press reported today that four people familiar with the probe confirmed its existence and said the investigation includes Green's killing and three other of the department's violent encounters with black men. The investigation is focused on white officers with State Police Troop F, a notorious unit in northeastern Louisiana, whose officers have mislabeled body camera videos, turned off their cameras during arrests, and otherwise worked to hide evidence from investigators. Some of the troopers already face felony charges. The Texas Bar Association is investigating State Attorney General Ken Paxton to determine whether he committed professional misconduct in his failed effort to overturn the results of the 2020 presidential election. The State Bar of Texas will consider whether Paxton made false or misleading statements to a court or filed a frivolous lawsuit when he contested the election results of four other states, claiming that President Trump lost because of fraud. If the bar concludes that he did commit misconduct, Paxton could be disbarred, suspended, or receive some other kind of punishment. The investigation is a highly confidential matter and is likely to take months. The U.S. passed a bill Wednesday to make the Pulse nightclub in Orlando